The Know Your Gear Podcast.
Hey everyone, how's it going? Welcome to the Know Your Gear Podcast, episode 353. First question I saw today was from Jonathan, who says, when setting up a bridge on a Strat or a Telecaster, do you need a radius? Do you need to radius the saddles so that they match the radius of the fretboard? If so, how do you do this? Any tips or tricks? It's a good idea to radius the bridge to the fretboard. A little tricky on the three saddle tellies, but it obviously can be done. Me personally, I did it for many years successfully, just doing it off feel and eyeball. You know, just kind of, you know, you can kind of sight the fretboard. It's a little rounder, and you just kind of make the saddles a little bit rounder. I will tell you this, the guitar will let you know when you have it right and when you have it wrong. A lot of us right now, some of you guys are probably laughing because you know exactly what I mean by that. Yeah, you know, if you radius it too much, man, you bend that note, it just goes and it's gone. It like runs on the beach, so to speak, because it's just, you know, the action. However, they do sell things like this. Let me show you one. This is a radius gauge. This is an undersaddle radius gauge. Now, this is a thicker one because I didn't have the actual ones I used, which are thinner ones. You can get these from Stumac. And you can also get these from Amazon. I've had, every time I talk about both, I've had always people mention that some of the ones from Amazon were not that great. You know, you get what you pay for in some cases, so just be aware of that. The thing about Amazon, though, that I always point out is if you don't have, or better yet, can't justify the Stumac budget, it's expensive stuff, man. I get it. I did a video this week showing you guys how to tap a fret, and I almost fell out of my seat when I saw the price of the hammer. I think when I bought the hammer, I thought it was $15. So I was thinking it was like probably $12-$15, and it was $50. So on that video, you'll see I actually went, purchased, tried an Amazon hammer, and then linked you the Amazon hammer for $14. I still think I liked the Stumac hammer a little better, fret hammer, but, you know, do I like it $40 more? I don't, but I didn't pay that. Remember, I bought my hammer forever ago. And this isn't a good time to mention that if you watch my videos, you'll see two fret hammers behind me. One has a piece of white tape. One piece has a piece of red tape, and it has the word rough written on it, R-U-F-F. And the reason is that one day when I was using my fret hammer from Stumac, the brass part fell out on my bench and the sand poured out of the hammer. And I was pissed, you know, as you would be, right? You're like, ah. It was at the time, it wasn't $50, but it still felt expensive at the time. I emailed Stumac. This is way before I had a YouTube channel. And I said, hey, I got this hammer and I've had it for a few months and this is what happened. And I'm just letting you know, I'm a little disappointed. And that's when I found out that they pretty much, and I say pretty much because, you know, 95% chance they warranty their products for life. So they sent me a new hammer. And then what I did was, when they did that, is I got all the sand into a little Ziploc bag, poured it back in, and then I epoxied on my the brass part again. And now I use it as a rough hammer. In other words, when I'm not doing frets, I can use it on other things. So there is a reason why it's a $50 hammer too. I feel like it's not fair to, if I don't say both sides of that coin. So back to the undersaddles. What I was going to tell you about the Amazon ones is Amazon's got great return policies. So if you do want to try cheap tools, I highly recommend you chance them on Amazon. I have done so many Amazon tool reviews over the years for you guys. One thing that's nice is I have gotten some really bad tools from Amazon to the point where they were they were inaccurate, or they were just horrible, or not even close to what was promised. And, you know, it's nice to, you know, give it to the wife and say, this was horrible. Can you send this back? And, you know, and you get a full refund. So that's cool. So if you want to try a cheap tool, maybe try it on Amazon and see how that looks, you know, how it works for you, you know, and then, and if you do have a bad experience, maybe that would help justify that next financial step up to the Stumac stuff. Cause like I said, they sell that service, they sell the warranty. In other words, that's their features. And, I can't say this enough. I mean, there's the sponsorship part is, as you guys know, I have an affiliate to Stumac. So if you buy Stumac tools, they kick some money back to this channel because they have an affiliate link. But all my tools I bought, I've been using them for years. I was using most of my tools are at least, you know, twice as old as my channel is. So I'll give you a reference. All right. So that is what I would suggest. You can do the under saddles. Could you use anything else? Sure. You could take and radius your fretboard a ton of different ways and then use that as the guide. That works as well. You can use a piece of cardboard or a piece of paper and kind of get the radius of the fretboard and then use that as the guide for the saddles. There's a ton of stuff like that. But I will tell you that for your own personal guitar, you could do it on your own with no tools. The tools are for precision. You know, when I do videos or when I talk about tools, a lot of times it's because I'm using the experience of doing guitars for customers, just like my deep dive videos is the whole concept of that. If you watch how I in process that guitar, that is what I'm doing is what I did for years when people would buy a guitar and they would bring it into my shop and say, hey, Phil, I just bought this guitar. Can you check it out? And everything I'm telling you in a deep dive geeky stuff section is what I would have gave back feedback to the customer of, this is what I saw. This is what I, you know, this is what I liked. This is what I didn't like. And then this is what we can fix or not fix on it and how I can do it. And so I just took that thing I was doing for years and just made it as a video platform or like a template for the video. So same thing with tools. I need precision tools because I need to replicate this process quickly over and over again for every customer. That's my thought. But for you yourself, you can mess with it until you get it right. I personally, for my own guitars, I don't use under saddles. When I radius my bridge, I will do it just literally by just how I feel, just adjust them. And then I check the intonation and make the intonation adjustments. So I hope that helps. I think sometimes, you know, instead of telling you how to do it, just telling you it's okay to do it certain ways, I think is nice. It's not everything has to be precise. you can get away with, you know, Eddie Van Halen is famous for known for, you know, he was, you know, messing around with his guitars for years. He had no idea what he was doing. And he just kind of dialed them in until he was happy and it worked. And it's because that works just as well. It's just not as fast and it's not as easy to duplicate. Micah sent a question. He says, which amp do you like best, the Jet Black or the Black Cat? So this week I did a Bad Cat Jet Black amp video, a review, if you guys saw that. And as you guys know, I'm hugely in love, or was in love, sometimes, you know, you fall out of love, guys, with my Bad Cat Jet Black. No, Black Cat. This is too much. Guys, this is too many Bad Cat Jet Black. Bad Cat, can we work on these names? This is getting nuts. Okay, so the new amp I reviewed is the Jet Black. My old amp is called the Black Cat. What I will tell you is that I received the Jet Black months and months and months ago. Okay, I want to say before, I can tell you it was earlier in November because it was before Black Friday. I had it way before Black Friday. They sent them out to a bunch of YouTube channels, as you can imagine, and I did not have an extremely positive experience with the amp right away. I mentioned in that video that I thought the knobs got a little warm and that kind of weirded me out, and I needed to talk to the ownership to know what that is because that was weird. I never experienced that before. And so they told me what they thought it was. They told me what the concerns would be or not be, which is fine. But as much as I love John and the guys at Bad Cat, that, you know, I am kind of taking this thing that I've made, this YouTube channel, I'm taking the honor and integrity of it and I'm lending it to companies constantly. And I just don't want to be wrong when it comes to stuff that, you know, look, if I'm wrong about a part on my guitar, I apologize. But if I'm wrong about an amp that can cut your house on fire, that is just not the situation I want to be in personally, for a ton of reasons. And the most being, it's just, I don't want you to be in that situation. So I am very thoroughly convinced that the Jet Black, although the knobs get warm, it's safe and it's fine. Okay. I've been using it. In fact, I didn't say this in the video, but I'm letting you guys know now, cause I don't really need to drive a point home in the videos. I let it on for days. I left it on for days and days and days. Okay. So, here's the deal. I love it, more than my Black Cat. My Black Cat's going to be probably for sale cause I just don't see the point of having both. The main difference between the two is they're very alike. So if you have a Black Cat, like I did, and you love it, I think you'd be fine. This amp though, and I'm pointing it behind me, where you're probably confused is when you see it, is it has white knobs on it now. It's because I took the knobs off. That was the thing I didn't like. I told you guys, I don't like the black on black knobs. I don't have any amps that I like where I like black knobs on black backgrounds. I like the light knobs on dark backgrounds, and I like dark knobs on light backgrounds because I like to be able to see them when it's low lit. Making YouTube videos is just like being on stage. The lights are in your face. You're kind of in the dark. People don't see it that way, just like on a stage. You think I'm really, you think it's really bright in here. It's not. It's very dark in this room with light just pummeling me in the face and pummeling the walls for the look. And so when I look to the side right now, I'm almost looking in the dark. So same thing with amps when I'm doing the videos. So I put plastic light knobs on there, and I definitely prefer the jet black to the Black Cat. And here's why. The only issue I have with the Black Cat is I think it's when I get it right where I love it. I wish it just had a little bit more high end frequency, but I'm okay with where it's at. But I mean, it'd be nice to have a little bit more. The jet black has way, way, way more high end frequency. And at first I didn't like that because it was just too bright. And ironically, I was talking to another YouTube channel that I'm not going to tell you who, but you saw who's got them right now. It was one of those channels for sure. And we were talking about it. And I said, yeah, I have an issue with the jet black. And they said, me too. They said, I love the clean, I hate the distortion. And I go, oh, I love the distortion, I hate the clean. And from that conversation, I was able to kind of talk, and we figured out like what it is. I think they still landed with, they love the clean, they don't like the distortion. But I landed with, I love the distortion. And now I like the clean. So the jet black is definitely awesome amp. I'm sorry, that answer was probably way longer than you wanted. You just wanted me to say which one I like. It's the jet black. There you go. Okay. Brian says the Badcamp amps are great, but I haven't been sucked in yet. I think the Freedman has ruined me for other amps. The Freedman amps are great. As you know, I still have my Freedman amps. I still love them. Freedman amps to Bad Cat, two slightly different animals. To me, the biggest difference, of course, besides tone differences, is feature set. The only thing I'm not a big fan of Freedman is that they don't have reverb. You know, so it's, I know it's a Marshall style amp and they don't have reverb, but you know, I kind of grew up, you know, with amps that had reverb. And so I'm so used to having reverb that even though I can put it in the effects loop, I just like having it in the amp ready to go. So that's the one thing I like about Bad Cat over Freedman. Other than that, I kind of agree with you. I like the Freedman stuff a lot. I kind of give the win to Bad Cat's clean channel over Freedman. But Freedman's distortion is just love. It's just, it's a great sound. It's awesome. So, okay. XXXXXXXX. I don't know, a lot of X's there. Says, does the KYG Zither guitar stand hold a full size V guitar? Not the Randy Rhoads style, but the full V2 style. This is the part I can't answer the question. This would, you'd have to probably reach out to Zither. It will hold a V. I have put a Gibson Flying V and I've put a Jackson Flying V in that exact stand, the Zither stand with the KYG logo, and I was fine. But some Flying Vs, whether you know it or not, like they could be from companies like Dean or BC Rich, they are longer. Like the body shape is longer. I forget which way V it is. There's a V where it doesn't spread out as much like this way as it shoots straight down more, you know, and it might be a little dangerously close. But if you're concerned, you can get a bass Zither stand that will take care of that. And I'm sure if you reach out to them or reach out to us, we can accommodate that. We can get you a bass stand with a KYG logo. You'll probably be the only one with one, but I'm sure it can happen. So the best thing about a mom and pop business, a smaller business, is you can talk to the owner and get things just taken care of, right? You're not going to talk to five reps who don't understand what you want and what you can do. You can get what you want. I guess the short answer of that is you can get whatever you want, Zither can probably take care of it. And we're pretty easy going too here. So of course, you know, they have our permission to put our logo on whatever that you need to accommodate you. Yeah, so there you go. Okay. Okay, let's see. All right. Sean from Austin wants to know, Phil, have you played any Rivera amps? I have played Rivera amps. I'm a huge Rivera fan. I reached out to Rivera pre-COVID. Rivera amps. And, you know, for that reason, I said, look, I'm a fan of your amps, but I have to admit that, you know, I've played only, you know, I played like a model you don't make anymore, you know, or I played this one. And I was really interested in amps, and I asked them very easily. I said, look, I would love to do some videos of your amps. Do you have a way, do you have an accommodation pricing for social media people like me, you know, that do reviews? Like, in other words, can you cut me a deal? Because, you know, this is expensive and you're going to get promotion. I was very, you know, I have a very professional email that I would send out saying, hey, basically, I'm not asking to borrow the amp, I'll buy it. But, you know, can we work out a deal? Like, dealer cost would be great, right? Something like that. Because, you know, to be honest with you, if I don't end up loving it and I don't keep it, I'm going to sell it. And, you know, I'll get the content. So I'm trying to find that thing. At that time, and I don't know if things have changed since then, they really didn't, they were nice enough to respond. So, you know, very cool people. But they basically responded with, we don't do social media. So they're not the only ones. I had the same email response from Dr. Z Amps. Same thing, reached out to them, said, hey, look, people are looking for videos of your stuff. I like your stuff. There's no one really to interact with for me, like dealer-wise. You know, is there any kind of accommodation pricing if I buy some? Can we get a discount if, you know, I'm doing social media, you know, reviews with your stuff, you know, getting your promotion? And at that time, they said the exact, pretty much the same way, same thing, differently said. They don't do social media. There's a lot of companies that just don't get to social media. And there's also a lot of companies, and that's the whole point about having a podcast like this, to talk honestly about all these crazy subjects. There are a lot of companies that do not want social media to do their videos because, not for the reason you think, sometimes they don't want to be associated with the brands that are social media branded. What I mean by that is, look, right now there's 1,000 of you. you're probably, some of you are already getting what I'm going to go now, and the rest of you will get it in a second, which is, think of a brand right now. You can put it in the comments, but let's keep it clean and nice for everybody, okay? Think of a brand right now. If I said that's a social media brand, in other words, you only see YouTubers play them, and you only see those YouTubers play them for the period of time where the product was provided, right? So in other words, like a year later, there's no sign of that brand anywhere on YouTube, okay? There's a ton of those brands that are social media only, you know, and, or they're just constantly pumping on social media, but yet you could walk into, you know, you don't see them on stages with artists, you don't see them anywhere. And you could see why some brands, ironically, if you think about Rivera and Dr. Z, two brands that I think are kind of prestigious boutique brands, maybe they don't get social media, one, because that's part of it. And a second one is, you know, they look at some of the branding that's out there and they're like, yeah, we don't want to be associated with the social media brand of the week. You know, think about this. There are brands, when I always think of a, just so you guys know, when I think of a brand, I can't even think of the name now. What's the name of the brand? The Panama Amps. I always think of Panama Amps. You know, you can go back in my channel far enough, you'll find the Panama Amps video. I've talked about this in the past. Panama Amps was my first brand, YouTube brand that I ever discovered. In other words, they came at me pretty hard. I was new to YouTube. I didn't know what was going on. They're like, we want to send you one of every one of our amps and you can keep them. I'm like, what? All your amps? I don't understand this. I go, and I picked one. I had them send it to me. And that was my first, like, I got punched a little bit when I said, hey, here's a bunch of concerns I have, and it doesn't sound very good. And then a bunch of channels were like upset because I guess they all said it was great. And then that brand kind of went to the wayside too, because here's why it went to the wayside. And I mean, no offense to them if they're still in business. You know, they seem like good people. They were really nice to me. There's no drama or issues there. They were very nice. The problem is that their product, although you could send it to a channel, a YouTube channel, they would talk about it, they would play it. Then a week later, it was just gone. It was absent. Very few channels, you know, kept it for any length of time. And there's a few channels that did, respectively. I think of like Robert Baker and Steve from Boston, you know, they would use theirs, I think, for years afterwards. But most channels, I didn't keep mine very long, but I was upfront in my video that I just didn't get it. I didn't think it sounded that great. So that's my point, right? Is that, so some companies, when I reach out to them, they don't get this. Although they get that hype can be made and sales can be had, you gotta have there's a level up or a level down associating your brand with things. So that's, that's how I kind of look at it, you know, and at this point in the juncture on the channel is I kind of look at that. Some brands help level up my channel, and sometimes I help level up a brand, and, you know, I try to find those mutual beneficial situations. But I didn't get to see some of you guys' posts. Some of you guys said Glary. You know, I should have said, should have been more specific. Brands especially that aren't direct-to-consumer. But direct-to-consumer brands, there's tons of them, of course, right? But, like, I'm talking about brands that you would see in stores, but you didn't see them in stores. Harley Benton, obviously, is a brand you associate with social media. And, again, this isn't to down those brands. There's an actually really cool Glary story coming on this channel that has nothing to do with Glary, the company. Which is, I hate letting it out of the bag soon. I did a video, you guys, some of you guys obviously probably saw it, some of you, where I reviewed a couple of the Glaries because, of course, like everybody, I was curious as hell, like, what? $30 guitars, let's check it out. And somebody said a comment in a video and it just got me, right on the ribs. And they were like, throw that straight into the landfill. I was like, I hate that. That's why I repair things for a living. I don't want things thrown away. I want to fix things. I want things to last. It pisses me off that I've bought 5 refrigerators in the last 10 years. It's like ridiculous. But my point is, and by the way, I've fixed all those refrigerators, but they just keep breaking, you know, because they're junk now. But my point is, I did a video, you guys know, where I took a Glary and I stuck stainless steel frets on it and I just fixed it all up and I turned it into a Super Strider. And the only thing that's dumb about that video, besides I'm in it, is, yeah, I shoved $1,000 basically into it, or some ridiculous amount of, if you had to pay the labor plus the parts, it was just ridiculous, right? But that guitar is amazing and it still plays this day. And here's the funny part about this. A company saw that and basically got inspired by that. And you're going to see this coming out soon. And I don't know really what to think of this company, but I want you to think right now, Glary, but decked out. At Glary prices, kind of like, why not make a cheap guitar but with better component kind of logic? I don't know. It's kind of strange. So there are good things that happen with that. Let's see. Shane says, don't trust any brand without a proper website. I can see that. But I think the loophole on that is, you know, you can... like I said, you can deal with some brands through Amazon, you know, and I've had good experience with that because of the Amazon does kind of keep some of those brands under control. Desert Fishman says, KYG merch is a social media brand. Yeah, of course it is. I don't think that's what we were going for, but yes, this is a social media channel, so I would say that makes sense. Let's see. You guys are so funny. Pimp my Glary. Okay. Okay, let me jump around. You guys have some great comments, but I get too distracted reading them. Let me go around to another one. Let's see. This question came in. This is an interesting one. The question came in from the ask, and like I said, please feel free. You can send questions to the knowyourgearpodcast.com website. There's an ask thing. You send it. Here's what I can tell you. We read every single one. If you're not on the show, it's just because we didn't think it applied or we forgot about it. I mean, you know, when I say forgot about it, we put it in a folder and maybe we didn't go back to that, but we will eventually get to them. This one's from a few weeks ago. But also, like I said, resubmit if you want, you know, I mean, it's the reason we do that, so you guys know, is so that you don't have to super chat me $5 to get pretty much guaranteed a question on the channel, you know. So I'm just saying, you got to do a little legwork too. I don't need to get paid to answer a question or talk about a subject, but I need you to put some, you know, sweat equity into it and send an actual email so we can see if it works out. It's something we want to talk about. This one was... you've done it out of thousands of deep dives. Hasn't been thousands, but I understand what they mean. What have you learned about all the guitars and the manufacturers? I have to say that was an interesting question because even I was like, and I'm glad it came through the email because I think if I was thrown on the spot, I might say something that's, you know, off the hip that's probably good. But I had some time to mull this one over, and and phrase this in a way that hopefully will be polite yet authentic. Okay, ready? Here's what I've learned from taking apart guitars and going through the specs and not just reading the ad copy. Like I said, I don't read the advertising stuff that's sent to me by companies. In fact, so much so that sometimes it becomes a source of contention between me and the company. They're like, you said this and it's this. And I'm like, nope, my ruler says this and your stuff is, I don't care what your stuff says. This is what I had in front of me. And here's what I learned. If you really pay attention to all those videos and you were to chart them, like somebody's going to, I always wonder if one day if somebody will be crazy enough to go through all my deep dive videos and put them on an Excel spreadsheets and kind of figure things out. There's got to be somebody that neurotic out there. Here's what I know you would find. The major, if not all of the videos, the major majority of them, 90% of the videos where the specifications that I discover when going through the guitar are different from the manufacturer's specifications, that guitar was made in China. It's that's why I said I wanted to be kind, but also, you know, upfront about this. It is without a doubt, no question. It's not even a manufacturer. It's when I say manufacturer, a brand. It's not a brand. It is country of origin. China-made guitars literally are off-spec 9 out of 10 times, and that's not actually accurate. It's almost 100% of the time, but I'm kind of giving myself some error, you know, in case somebody finds one video I don't remember doing or something. And what I mean by that is, a perfect example was this beautiful guitar this week. It said it had a 12-inch radius fretboard, but yet mine has a 20-inch radius fretboard. I see that constantly, and I've seen it go both directions where things were slightly better than what they spec'd. Things were slightly worse than what they expect. And I don't mean mistakes. I'm talking about actual, like, they say this is mahogany and it's actually palomino, right? Or they say this is, you know, 3 inches and it's actually 2.5. Like, it's literally things that are off the spec. But the more important answer to that question, or to that question that's being asked, is not only are the guitars that are made in Chinese factories, the most that are off, it actually gets exponentially worse the more unknown the brand is. So what I mean by that is I've reviewed the Chinese-made Paul Reed Smith guitars, and those were very close to what they say the specs, the manufacturer specs say the guitar is. Very close. But yet, when I get to the brand that you've never heard of and I've never heard of, it's almost like three or four things on the guitar are just not even close to what they're saying the specifications are. The interesting, there's more to be said about this. There's actually a last weird component of this observation I have. I've also noticed that 100%, and I'm going to go with 90% again, but I feel it's 100%, but I'm going to say 90% of the companies that I've not only saw the video where I was off, you know, or this information was off. So in that case, 100% of the companies that saw the videos actually communicated to me anything. Okay. So they never said like, oh, I can't believe, you know, like they said, hey, I think you're wrong. They don't say that. They don't say, hey, that's shocking, we didn't know that, or thank you for information. There's no ever any communication to me ever in the history of the channel from any company saying anything about what I said in the video. That is interesting. Now, the other part is where I'm going to say 90%, but it's probably 100% too. Out of the companies I've reached out to and specifically talk to, like I said, I'm old, so a phone looks like this and not like this. When I talk to them or email them, there is, again, no response and no care. There is no, like, we've talked to the manufacturer, thanks for the information. There is a caveat to that. The caveat is, if it is a Chinese factory and brand, and I talk to the company, in other words, the factory in China is actually the brand. Because like I said, I'm not talking about a brand that's having guitars made in China. The brand never seems to care what I have to say or think about these things being off from each other. But when there is the brand and the factory are one and the same in China, I do tend to see reaction and feedback. But to date, as nice as it's been that they've all reacted and said things and also gave pledges to improve, I've never seen any follow-up from them. In other words, they've never said, hey, here's the new version, not messed up, or here's what we did. Like, there's no follow-up. And even if I've responded with email saying, hey, I'm following up from a year ago, I did a video where I said this was off and you guys told my viewers, like, we're going to fix that. Any updates on that? And it's like, crickets. So I think that is a great question. And I hate giving that answer because, you know, it's everything on the internet becomes some kind of politicized crap. It's not where I want to go with that. I'm just giving you factual data. That's the factual data. It's almost non-existent in that number in any other country of origin. Now, on the second part of this, when it comes to Indonesia, Korea, Japan, Germany, USA, then if I was going to say who's the next most off specific, it's USA. it's like the cheapest guitars are far off from what they say, and the American guitars tend to be slightly off from what they say in some variants of off that. So that's what's interesting about that. I would say the most dead on are definitely made in Korea, made in Indonesia, and made in Japan are the three most where I open a box and I go through a guitar and they say this is what it is. My rulers, my measuring guides, my stuff says the same thing, the internal parts. The other thing that's interesting is, here's another thing I'm noticing, and this is not part of this question. The question was, you know, what have I learned about all the guitars and manufacturers? Here's something that I am observing happening more and more, which is interesting. The deep dive series videos that I do are becoming very hard to do because more companies are not disclosing details, which is interesting to me. In a world where everyone, you know, where we say on this channel all the time, you know, that you have to buy before you try, in a world where companies are mostly leaning into the online sales, you think they would give more information on their websites, more pictures, more specifications, more details and measurements. And what I'm finding is, even though you see new brands all the time giving more of that information, it feels like, oh, they're joining the new way of, the growing way of consuming guitars. I find it's when you have to do this, like I have to do this, I'm constantly just out of frustration looking online for just any piece of information. Like, it doesn't tell me what potentiometers are here. It doesn't tell me, you know, what kind of pickups, what kind of magnets. There's just less and less information being given. And the reason I think that is because of reviewers like this channel, like me. And it's not just me. There's a ton of reviewers out there, especially a lot of the smaller channels that are getting really detailed with the reviews too. I think they just rather not be wrong or perceived as lying or perceived as being incorrect. So they're just like trying to fix that by going, we'll just be general with our wording. And the wording is getting very, very general. You go on a specific website and it's tough. And another thing that's happened that's interesting, and then we'll go on to the next subject that's happened that's connected to this too, is sometimes the resellers like Sweetwater and Guitar Center, their information is different than the website's information, which is very difficult for me because then I'm trying to figure out who's got the right information, like who was sent the ad copy and who did somebody not update the current, you know, guitar website, or has that been updated and the sellers haven't been updated? So that gets a little confusing, and that's why I got to get a little bit, you know, more into the guitar and try to figure out what it is. But the other thing that's also a little tricky is that they're being vague, which is tough. And I have no idea where I was going with that. Sorry, I got sidetracked on the sellers. Basically, what I'm trying to say is, oh, somebody said supply chain issues. They're using these generic terms more and more, you know, that are just getting harder and harder to, you know, lock them down on a thing where they're just like, it's all wood. It has, you know, it has a nut. I'm like, oh, okay. What is the material? What is this stuff? You know? And it's interesting that way. So like I said, those are my observations. I really enjoyed that question, because I really like talking about obviously guitars, and I really like talking about how I do the videos of the guitars and why I work so hard to improve the channel over the years, you know, to make a better content, because I, you know, I have a passion for what I do, and it's actually getting harder and not easier. So it's getting kind of tricky. It's getting tricky. And when I personally reach out and ask companies, sometimes I'm really shocked how many times the companies have their responses they don't know. I'm like, well, can you tell me what this is? And they're like, we don't know. I'm like, well, you sent it to me. You don't know? Can you ask somebody what it is? They're like, nobody knows. I'm like, And one response that always kind of makes me, in my head, always kind of makes me chuckle is I got a response once that said that that guitar was designed at the when the old ownership owned the company. And when the new ownership took on, they're just assuming they're doing it the old way. And this is the first they've heard that it's different. And I'm like, yeah, well, I get it. Not everybody's taking out socks and rulers and stuff for your guitars. I get it. So let's see. Vicky DeMio? DeMio? I'm messing up your name, Vicky. Vicky says, Phil, when is the Phil McKnight Tim Pierce show for people who signed up for his classes from here? That's a great question. You know, he reached out to me 2 weeks ago and said, when do you want to do it? And I said, I'm really open Mondays through Thursdays. And then I think I was just, I was talking to my wife, I think yesterday morning about that when we were going for a walk about how I never really followed up with Tim Pierce. I will follow up with Tim to get our schedules out there. And then I think we're going to do it the same way we did it last year is I'm going to host it and then he'll come on and then, you know, even so I will, in other words, I will text him this weekend. so you know, I will text him this weekend. I know, so you guys know that when we first did this promotion for his lesson courses, I did talk to him briefly about when does he want to do the thing. And at that time, he was getting ready to perform at the Grammys. So he performed at the Grammys this year. So that was, you know, obviously I didn't want to stress him out or mess with him. So I can, I don't think it'll be a problem message him this weekend and talk to him about it. And we'll get it out. He'll communicate it to you all, you guys, but I'll set it up with the links. All right, just looking for others. Hold on. I have no idea where I'm at. Jumping around. Okay, let me do this real quick because I'm pretty sure Amanda's been grabbing questions for me. Thank you, Amanda. And I'm gonna go grab some of these. Jeremy C says, hey, Phil, what's the deal with Epiphone neck shapes? Oh, I had this pinned too. Thank you, Amanda. I grabbed it earlier when Jeremy posted it too, but thank you for grabbing it. Says so basically, here's the question. Jeremy wants to know what's the deal with the Epiphone neck shapes because he asked a rep at Sweetwater the difference between the 60 Slim Taper and the Slim Taper, and he said they were the same. And so here's why I do exactly what I do. I try to template the back of the neck and I do the measurements is because they are slightly off from each other. So to me, there's no difference. But interesting enough, I will say this. Even though Epiphones are made in China, and I made a whole statement a few minutes ago about how China is the most off-spec company or manufacturer, source of manufacturing, the country, China, I would say the most consistent with those guitars are the Epiphone guitars. And I think it's because not only is it their factory, but also, again, the bigger the brand, the more might to come back and say, hey, this is wrong. Fix this. But even that being said, as far as I know, there's no real difference either. Not in the measurements I've taken. And if it's off, it's just because everybody's, you know, hand sanded, you know, a little bit more, a little bit less. This is, so you know, Jeremy, this is not an Epiphone issue. This is a Gibson issue. If you take, this is what's nuts. You're trying to buy an Epiphone, which is an expensive guitar. And then when you go to buy a really crazy expensive Gibson guitar, like at Wildwood Guitars and stuff like that, and you go on their website where they detail everything. Wildwood gives you the weights. I don't know if you guys know this, but they actually give you the thicknesses, I think at the first fret and the 12th fret of the guitar, of the actual guitar. Go on there and look at Gibsons. It's all over the damn place. it's just nuts. And Fenders too, especially custom shop. So, you know, it's getting machine tolerances out of a piece of wood is a very difficult thing. So there'll be variances. But this is not your point of your question. Your point of question is the terminology. They use different terminology. I don't know specifically. I'm with your Sweetwater rep. I haven't noticed anything. There might be some diehard Epiphone / Gibson fans that are like, no, the difference is when they say this, it's slightly off, but I'm telling you the same thing the rep says, which is to my hands playing the two Slim Taper or 60 Slim Taper, I've noticed very little difference. And if there is, I'm not shocked, but it's not noticeable to me. Oliver says, dear Phil, how can I check if my frets are silver, nickel, or stainless steel? Thank you. This has been a big pain in the ass for me to do because of the fact that so many companies are like, I got stainless steel frets. And I've done this. You know, the problem is you know, you can, even though they're called nickel silver, you know, they you can put a magnet on them, but most of the time, so in other words, I've tried to use a magnet to see if, like, okay, it doesn't hold at all, it's because it's stainless steel, but then sometimes the magnet will grab, it won't grab the nickel silver frets. And I know what you guys are thinking, you know, nickel isn't magnetized, but nickel silver frets are other metals too. The bigger problem is that the magnets that I can use that are probably going to detect what fret it is for me really want to pull towards the truss rod. So there are chemicals that you can use. I've tried chemical reactions. Trust me, it's a part I want to add to the video series. Like, hey, these are stainless steel. These are, the problem is that these companies aren't very accurate, like I said before, about how, you know, what is this ratio of stainless steel? You know, as everybody knows, stainless steel, you know, I don't know, you cannot know anything and everybody knows this. There's a big difference in stainless steel quality just in knives, right? You know, surgical equipment, stainless steel is much different, what they're using at hospitals, than what you find at your swap meet that says stainless steel and etched into a knife, you know what I mean? So there's different kinds of this metal. The real sucker pain in the ass of this is, if I really want to know and tell you accurately how good or bad a fret is, I need to cut it. I have done so many fret jobs that if I get out and I cut a fret, you know, snip it on the end, I can tell you exactly what it is and how good it is. Paul Reed Smith claims that the nickel silver frets they use on Paul Reed Smith guitars is not as hard as stainless steel, but it's one of the closest materials you can get to stainless steel for hardness. As someone who's refretted a couple PRS guitars and had to pull them and cut them and stuff, they are hard. They are harder than normal. You know, I've cut through frets where it's like literally like butter, right? Like you just snip it, it just comes through like nothing. The stainless steel frets that I buy, the Jesscar stainless steel frets that I buy and use, I hate cutting them. Everybody talks about sanding them and filing them and all stuff. That stuff's fine. It just takes a little bit longer and to do it. But snipping them on the ends, if you watch that video of that glary with me putting the frets, when you watch me snip, it's like, dude, that was so hard because I'm trying to put it in camera angle and I had my arm extended so I can't just like get leverage and dude, it was so hard to squeeze that. I feel like I was like, man, I gotta get one of those hand squeeze toys, right? And just work my hands for a couple of days because it was so hard to squeeze through that stainless steel. So if some of you guys are metallurgists out there, some of you guys are a little bit more, have more practical experience with this, I would love a real test. And I would gladly do it from now on to every guitar. But I've done hours of online research and I've tried a bunch of things and I've had a couple people suggest things to me and nothing was, quantifiable to where I feel like I'd want to stand behind that and say, yes, this actually is. So a lot of times, you know, what I can tell you, what I'm doing, because I am testing the frets. So you understand, when I tell you a guitar is, like this Cort guitar has stainless steel frets, and I go, and this guitar has nickel silver, like this, single cut bevel, or Steve Brown special. I don't know why I said single cut bevel. How I'm testing them, which is not super accurate, which is why I'm not standing behind it, but I'm giving you at least enough to know that I have tested it, is I'm polishing them. And that I can tell you, I've polished enough frets. You can tell stainless steel frets are hell to polish. They are hell. They are not easier. They are harder. They have tons of micro scratches in them and they are very hard to get out. And even Dremel wheels and buffing wheels, it's just really tough to get stainless steel to polish. And then here on the counterpart of that is, but once you polish stainless steel, it looks like a mirror. In fact, one of the things you can see real quick when I'm walking, looking at a guitar, is that if I polish, like this Parker has stainless steel frets that I'm pointing at right here, and this SBS has nickel silver. If I was to take my polishing Dremel and polish both these fretboards, what I will tell you immediately from 2 feet away, you will notice is you will see the reflection of the strings of that Parker in the frets. Like they're little, like they look like horizontal mirrors. That's how great they are. One of the problems is that I have to polish them to find that out. And that still doesn't tell me anything other than I can tell you that as much as you can polish a nickel silver, you cannot get it as mirror-like as a stainless steel fret. So, I don't know. Like I said, so if you have suggestions, especially if you have good suggestions, can you email them to us at the knowyourgearpodcast.com website? Go there and send us an official answer, and I'll gladly research it. I see some comments here. Whatever you guys say, I'll give it a try. I'll keep giving it a try because I would like to have a real quantifiable test that can illustrate something to you guys and feel confident. Sound Music says, Phil, what floor pedal tuner do you use? I use the Peterson's Mini. It's not the Mini one, the Peterson. It's like this big. I think there's three Peterson. Yeah, let's look. All right, here we go. I use, maybe it is the Mini. Yeah, I'm going to say it's the Mini. Okay, here we go. Ready? This is the one I use. If it helps, what's interesting is I noticed though that this one, that I have, I don't think it says where it's made, but I think it's made in China. And then what I noticed is after Peterson came out with this version of this tuner pedal, I noticed like all of a sudden there's all these brands with versions of it. And I've tried a bunch of the other brands, like Pictronics has one, and they seem the same. Like it just seems like the same pedal being reproduced over and over again. So I don't know specifically. And by the way, I don't want to say Pictronics copied or anything. I don't know that to be true. But when I look at the Pictronics one and I look at the Peterson one, they look almost identical to me. And then when I check them, they seemed almost identical. So I'm just saying there's versions of the Peterson strobe tuner out there. It looks like, you know, that's one of the things that happen when you have your stuff mass produced overseas. I could be totally wrong. They could be made in the USA, but I didn't see that on the packaging. But that's the one I use. And why do I do that? Because I've been using Peterson strobe tuners for, you know, 25 years longer. So, you know, Peterson was like, you know, Peterson to me is like Bose. Back in the day, they were so crazy expensive to get the real thing. And then when you got it, you paid so much more money for it. You're like, you know, and then you fast forward 25 years later and now you can pick them up for a nickel. To you guys, maybe $120 sounds like a lot for two. But to me, if they made a $120 strobe tuner pedal in 1998 or 97, I would have had a heart attack. It'd have been so amazing to get a strobe, a strobe tuner that cheap. Would have been just fantastic. I got my first Peterson strobe tuner, like a lot of us do, used, and I paid through the nose. You know, I was lucky just to get 20% less than what they were going for new, because it was such good quality stuff and mandatory if you wanted to do setups and stuff. Okay. Trolls something says, 119 for a tuner. Damn, they're free on the App Store. Yeah, I use the app one too. I use the Boss. App is what I use, right? Just gonna say. So you're not wrong. There it is. That's the Boss one. It works great. Like I said, precision when it comes to working on somebody else's guitars, I like the strobe tuners. I just feel like it's more accurate. And then for me, it's a little bit more of a, I don't know, it calms me down knowing that when I'm setting up the guitar and I'm using the strobe tuner and I'm dialing it in precise for a video, because the last thing I want to hear is like, your guitar is 4 cents off. I'm like, oh, get over it. So there you go. It's funny. Okay. Let's do this. How are we doing on time? We're doing good. Okay, Louis says, my guitar came specced with 10 to 46s. I have a set of 10 to 48 strings, and the low E string is different, right? It's a 48 instead of 46. Do I need to do much? No, you don't have to do anything, man. You just, you just use those strings. The variance in there is so tiny that, you know, worst case scenario, if the nut slot was cut super tight to that 46, maybe you want to use something to lubricate it, like I said. I did a video recently. You can use Big Ben's nut sauce or lubricant or 3-in-1 oil or a pencil, you know, whatever does the job will work fine. Okay, let's see. Okay, hold on a second. Okay, I'm just going through this. Jose wants to know, are the PRS cleaning kits worth it for the SE? I'm not sure if the cleaners are for the core models. I've never cleaned my guitar with oils and stuff like that, only the fretboard, so I don't know. So the whole, in my opinion, when it comes to self-branded cleaning kits, Fender's cleaning kits, Gibson's, Paul Smith, you know, maybe the exception would be some acoustic brands, okay? But in my experience, most of the brands that have their branded cleaning kits, mostly what it is, they're going to claim all kinds of things. And a lot of those claims are pretty silly. I mean, let's be honest. I mean, not as silly as Gibson saying it's tone polish. I wish that wasn't a real thing. That was. Google it. What they're doing is the same logic a lot of brands have done for many years, which is once they know you trust the brand, you know, you buy this product, you trust the brand, then putting that brand on other type products that they don't make and don't really have a whole lot to do with, although some of these companies do kind of, you know, approve some of these kits and polishes. They're just relying on that. So your logic is like, I have a PRS. I want my PRS to look great. And so I'll buy the PRS kit. And if that gives you comfort, then I'm not here to tell you not to do something like that. But what I will tell you is this, I use, Music Nomad stuff and Lizard Spit. And that's it. That's the two I use. I have no issues with any other ones. There's all kinds of opinions on the internet about what polishes are good and what polishes are bad. I've said this before. The guy at Lizard Spit drank some of his stuff. And I was like, holy crap. Okay. He was like, eh. He didn't get drunk. But same thing with, you know, Music Nomad. They actually will disclose some of the stuff that they're using. My problem sometimes with, you know, Dunlop and a lot of the polishes is, man, just getting information from them. As a YouTuber, I've done videos and I've reached out to these companies personally, you know, and here's my logic on this. And I just want to be clear. My logic is if I got a 250,000 subscribers and I'm trying to get a company to give me a piece of information as a consumer, as an unsponsored consumer video, and they don't respond, I'm like, you got no chance if you're just, you know, one subscriber, right? You got one subscriber on your Facebook. They don't care about you. My point is they shouldn't, it's not that they should care about these YouTube channels and these, you know, Instagrams and stuff, but I'm just saying if you put that weight behind it and you can't get anywhere with it, that makes me nervous when they won't answer questions and they know there could be a, you know, without the right proper information, I could be out there telling people the wrong information. Who would want that? So that's what I'm saying. So I really trust the Music Nomad guys and I really trust Lizard Spit. And for when it comes to polishes and cleaners, and that's what I use on all my guitars, period. And I've been using them straight since I just switched them and bought them years ago before COVID, and that's what I use. It's up to you guys, but there's nothing that I've ever read or heard when it comes to electric guitars that says that, you know, like, let me put it this way. There's no company out there claiming, like, if you don't use Gibson polish on a Gibson and Fender polish on a Fender, your warranty's voided or anything like that, or your finish is at risk. There's nothing like that. There might be claims that theirs is better for that type of finish, and there might be some accuracy in that. Not that I can imagine, but I always keep a little bit of open-minded to something you're not aware of. But I'm just telling you again, regardless of that, this is what I use, so, you know, I have some pretty nice guitars, and I've not messed up a single one in all the years. So there you go. We'll be in it together. If your guitar gets messed up, then mine will get messed up too. Cliff wants to know, what do you use on fretboards? I use the Music Nomad stuff. It's awesome. It's a little bit of oil. And you can use it on maple fretboards. I saw Scott Grove in the audience a second ago. I think Scott... I think Scott has a video where he uses water, right? I remember that, Scott, when you did that video. That gave me a heart attack, by the way. But it's because, you know, like that's their point. I think the point of you doing that video is exactly what I'm saying too. It's like, this is what you use. This is what he uses on his guitars. So I think he just uses like a damp cloth and a dry cloth and just says, call it a day. Eddie Van Halen refused to let anybody use any cleaners on any of his guitars. So, you know, I think that's, I didn't read that somewhere. I was told that by the EVH company. You know, they were saying like when they were working with the guitars, you're not allowed to touch them or clean them. He never cleaned any of his guitars. So, you know, so there you go. So there's three options. You can use Scott Grove's water. You can use Music Nomad and Lizard Spit. You can use the branded stuff, or you can be Eddie Van Halen and just not use anything. So, and then a lot of people are putting comments about other brands like Turtle Wax and other stuff like that. And again, if that works for you guys and you've had that, you know, that's great. But again, I can only tell you guys what I've used and what I've had good luck with. So, okay. I'm just gonna, let's see. All right. Jez Mack says, "Hey Phil, I saw your Court review the other day and I was left wondering if at 24 million guitars from this one manufacturer, when in the name of sustainability do you think we'll reach peak guitar?" Okay, so let me clarify what I think he's getting at there. So I did the Court review of the X700. They were nice to send one out. They sent them out to a bunch of channels, and that was very nice of them. In my video, I mentioned that Court has hit its 50th anniversary this year, and that in that 50 years, they have made 24 million guitars. And the thing to note about that is, that isn't divided by 50 years. It's definitely a ramp up, okay? So it looks like this. You know, if you're looking at it like a stock chart, it's the bulk of those guitars have been coming in the last recent years. So that's a lot of damn guitars. And so to Jezmack's question is, at what point, you know, do they reach the peak? In other words, you know, they're making so many guitars, at what point? Especially since a lot of these guitars don't go away, and every guitar they compete with. That was why Fender had trouble getting its IPO. You know, they got called out by the New York Times for saying, like, you know, at least when Apple, you know, comes out with a new iPhone, their old iPhone's obsolete because they drive down their hardware or it's outdated technology in some cases. Where Fender, you know, they said, this is what the article said. It even said, like, their artists that they endorse and sponsor, like Eric Clapton, say they like the older ones even better. So every time Fender makes a guitar, it's like that guitar they made is competing with a new guitar they're gonna make in the future. And what that article was missing, in my opinion, so you know, is this. This wall. I told you, you know, there's terms that I just can't get on board with, right? When people say a guitar doesn't have a soul, I'm like, yeah. My joke is, if it had a soul, it was when it was a live tree and we killed it. But you're supposed to have a soul, and maybe you can play with soul. There's another term that also gets me, which is need and want. Who needs five guitars? How many guitars do you need? And I always say, you don't need any guitars. You know, ask people around the world going through horrible tragedies of, you know, whatever's going on, Mother Nature problems, you know, wars. Ask them how many guitars they need. They're going to say none. They need food. We need weapons. We need shelter. That's what they need. That's what things you need. These are luxury items. And when people say, whoever, you know, $3,000 guitar is a luxury item, a $30 guitar is a luxury item. The very first guitar I ever got, which was my JB player with used an amp and cable and strap, was $130 with tax, was definitely a luxury item for me, and it was definitely a luxury item for my mother to pay for at that time in my life. And it was as luxury as anything I own on this wall. In fact, if you were to take what I make now versus what my mom made when she bought me that first guitar, none of these guitars has ever had any close to effect of me hurting me financially as it did that one guitar hurt my mother. You know, she had to adjust our food for the week, you know, to get me a guitar. That's a luxury item for sure. So her, you know, knucklehead son could play guitar, and God bless her for that. But my point is that this is a luxury item. Okay. It just is. And we are, mostly hobbyists. And the best part is when people try to attack hobbyists, which I always defend, because the argument I always say is flawed. Billy Gibbons is a talented artist, but he is a collector and a hobbyist. I'm sorry if it triggers and pisses you off. Eddie Van Halen is a amazing artist, and he's a collector and a hobbyist. You can be all of these things. Some musicians that I've interviewed and met over the years, they are not hobbyists. They're legitimately not hobbyists. They have 5 guitars and they have 8 Ferraris, and that's what they're hobbyists for. They're into their cars, right? They're into their, their jet skis and their other things. I mean, you can be into other things. So some people are not into guitars, all just guitars. Some people just like making music, you know, and you can just make music with anything. So they literally, some of us are hobbyists. Some of us are hobbyists and artists. Right? Some of us are players. Some of us are players and hobbyists and collectors. And so my point to this equation, Jezmac, what you're asking is, you know, where's the peak? Where does this end? They're making so many guitars. There's only so many humans on the planet Earth. Well, it doesn't matter how many humans there are. We're fanatically crazy. We're hanging out on a Friday. There's probably 1,000 of you. There's 1,281 of you hanging out watching me talk about this crap. My crap, I mean, the thing we all love. Right. In fact, right now, screw how many people are watching or listening to this live right now. You know how many spouses and friends and significant others right now are listening to this going in the background, rolling their eyes going, oh, God, what the hell's wrong with you and this guy on YouTube? Right? So that's what I'm saying. We're gas addicts said addict. Right. We're addicts. We're addicted to it. You know, like I told you guys, if I suddenly started making millions of dollars, there would not be a row of cars in front of my house. It'd be dumber guitars. I wouldn't buy super crazy expensive guitars. I just can't do it. But like, I'm not buying $20,000 guitars, even if I had crazy money to throw away. I just can't do it. But it would get sillier. it would definitely get sillier. It's because I already know this, because as I've done better in my life, I have gotten sillier with it. And so I think that's what's going to happen. It's talk about this. It's 24 million guitars made by Court Tech and 5 million guitar players bought them all. So that's what we're doing. We're buying them all. And there you go. And that really lends to another argument that's always comes up, which is, and I've heard this one a lot. I've heard that the hobbyists and collectors, the negative of it, well, hobby and collecting is negative because it's essentially hoarding, you know, right? It's not great for the world. But as I've always pointed out, you know, everybody's got to get through their life. How have they got to get through it? And you know, there's worse things you can do with your money than buy guitars with it for you and for other people in your life. But the one thing that I heard that's always been an interesting argument, and I'm not arguing the argument. I'm going to be the devil's advocate here. I'm going to tell you the argument and I'm going to give you my side. The argument is that hobbyists make it impossible or harder for professionals to buy quality instruments because they buy up all these, you know, old vintage guitars. The hobbyists buy up all these, you know, high-end guitars, and then the professionals, they can't afford them. You know, they can't afford, to buy these guitars. And a perfect example is I'll use a vintage guitars, you know, right? The hobbyists drive up the vintage guitar prices to the point where professional musicians can't even buy them, you know? And I don't mean like the Joe Bonamassas who are rich. I'm talking about professional musicians who are not rich, right? Most professional musicians are lucky to make just above livable wages. My counter argument, my devil's advocate argument is that the collectors also drive down guitar pricing. It is one and the same. Yes, collectors buy up the really good quality guitars, and they make it impossible for a professional, especially a working professional in the hometown, there's no way they can buy it. Like somebody will say, hey, because of hobbyists, a working professional in town trying to play gigs can't buy an American Strat. But I agree with you. But also because of hobbyists, it's why a Mexican Strat and a Squire is getting so damn good, because they really want to sell you 10 guitars. No guitar company that I've ever talked to, interviewed, or talked, especially behind the scenes, have ever said, what we want is every guitar player to have one of our guitars. They go, no, they want them to have 10. They want you to buy more guitars. And so they increase the quality of the guitars, and they get really cutthroat with the pricing, and that kind of opens up some better quality guitars at lower prices. That is an argument. By the way, that is not my argument to say the first statement is not true. I'm just giving you two sides of that coin, because in some cases, one of those things can be true, both-sided. So, BC Rich 581. I'm sorry, BC Rich. I don't know why I'm messing up your name. I've said it a ton of times over the years. Says there ain't there are not that many professional musicians. And like Phil said, usually don't earn enough to buy expensive vintage guitars. This is true. It's a declining, you know, it's declining out there. And again, you know, the reality is that we all are musicians and we all love this. And nobody wants to see anybody, you know, unhappy with it. That's what's great about this. That's why I said, I always think it's funny. And the reason I always get defensive, it's not because I look at myself as a hobbyist and then I'm like, I'm a hobbyist and they're making fun of hobbyists or they're hard on hobbyists. It's because I rarely see the opposite argument. I never see the hobbyists complaining about the professionals, right? It's this argument that somehow one side is more, you know, evil or vain than the other. And the reality is, like I said, we're all just people who are passionate about this guitar, the guitars we love, and music. The commonality is the strength, not the differences. That's just for the record. Okay. Let me get into some of these super chats real quick because I'm refresh this, drink some water. Let's hit them and let's go. Litvay, thank you so much. He says, here's for no ads. Premium is totally worth it. I have YouTube Premium. I love it. I preach it all the time. It's like I said, it, just so you guys know, if you, I don't get a cut of YouTube Premium, right? In fact, I'm pretty sure if you're on YouTube Premium, I make less than if you get to see an ad. Okay, but as someone who owns, I buy YouTube Premium, you get 6 people for $25 a month versus 1 for 14. So definitely if you think that makes more sense, I mean, for double the money, you get 6 more people. And there's no Netflix crap as of doing this video. There's none of that. Like, they live, my daughter lives in her own apartment and she has, YouTube. Ralph, his YouTube Premium is because of my account. Because you can just send it as an invite and they're your premium members. You get ad-free YouTube. You get to download on your phone. And then you also get YouTube Music, which is just like Spotify. Some people don't like it as much. I actually like it better, but it's tit for tat as far as I'm concerned. So you're actually getting like music streaming music that you can download your phone to. So just consider it. Of course, this is usually where everybody goes, just get ad blocker. You can do that too. I'm just telling you, I have my experience with YouTube Premium is that I like it. Clan of House Cats says, I got an Ernie Ball JP6 in Sky Blue last week. Might be my favorite Ernie Ball finish. I love that finish. Which Petrucci guitar are you keeping? I'd say in the long term, probably none. I love the Petrucci guitars, but I've owned a ton. And when it comes to Music Man guitars, two guitars to me are that are identical. I'm trying to think if there's any other brands that I can think of right now. But the two brands that I have the same, like they're the same to me, the same problem, it's Paul Reed Smith and Music Man. What I mean by that is I'm drawn to them for a ton of reasons. One, they're beautiful to me. Two, they are flawlessly executed. And, you know, I mean, Music Man and PRS to me are two of the most well-built guitars in the market. You know, when you're looking at them, you know, just looking at the quality of how they do it. But both those guitars, if you notice, if you watch the channel for a length of time, look at this. You can see my Fenders. They stick. Look at my Gibsons. My Gibsons stick around for years. The Parkers stick around for years. There's tons of guitars that stick around for years. The PRSs I flip constantly because I'm always looking for that one. Nathan made me one. I use his a lot. But like I said, it's not very PRS feeling. It's kind of cool and different. When it comes to actual PRSs, I have my Mira I've stuck with. I have an S2 that I like. I think it's right behind me. This single cut S2 semi-hollow in black. I really like that. I like my PRS hollow body a little bit. I just don't stick with them. And same with the Music Mans. So when you see them, I have them sometimes for a few weeks, sometimes a few months, maybe even a couple years, and then they're gone for something else because I'm trying to find the one. And, you know, I was... when I was at the Sweetwater event last year, Rhett Schall had mentioned that he has always been looking for a PRS that he likes. He says he gets that why people like them. It's just they're not for him. And then I guess he liked the new Tele. I don't know if he got that, the new NF53 or not. And I mentioned to him, I said, yeah, I like my Mira a lot. And then after that, I just haven't found a PRS that speaks to me. The hollow body too is the closest I've ever, I think, felt connected to an actual PRS guitar that's, you know, wasn't specifically like Nathan made for me. And same with the Music Man's. I really like Petrucci's guitars a lot. They sound great. They play great. You know, it's just, you know, you're accustomed to what you're accustomed. For me, the Petrucci guitars, the necks are either too small this way or too thin this way. And I'm, although that's great, it's just not in my, you know, it's not in my love care category, where I feel a little bit more connected to guitars like the Fenders, the Kiesels, the Gibsons, the Nags guitars a little bit, you know, just those necks. Because I've said this before, for me, it's just about the neck. How does the neck feel? And so I'm just really comfortable. And part of that, I think, and that's what I've been trying to work out for myself for many years, is I think part of the reason I'm not loving some of the Music Man necks and some of the PRS necks is because for most of my years playing guitar, not only did I not, could not afford those guitars or think about those guitars anyway, I didn't even have the nerve to pick them up in stores. I mean, you know, I couldn't afford a Fender Strat for until my 30s, but at least I would pick one up in a store and go, this is nice. One day, if I have money, getting this. PRSs and Music Mans and stuff, I'd walk into stores. I wouldn't even touch that stuff. Are you kidding? That's the kind of stuff where you're like, have I scratched this? Like, I can't afford this. I can't afford to, you know, I'd be financially destitute. I just don't have a reference of them. And so I built the core of my playing on other companies' necks. So there you go. We'll see. I'm really excited about some stuff coming up with PRS because, like I said, I really kind of feel connected mostly to PRS S2s. So, Bogger McPherson says, Phil, do you have a favorite guitar you own? I do. It's just going to suck when I say it because it's just cheesy. It's my Kiesel Delos. And then my second favorite guitar, you say, what's my favorite? That's my favorite for sure. That's 9 out of 10 times if I'm picking up a guitar, that's what I'm playing. If it's not that guitar, it's my Gibson SG. And if it's not that, it's probably the PRS Mira. Those are the three go-to hard guitars for me a lot. And over the years, you guys have heard me, the PRS Mira takes the backseat to the SG because I discovered SGs. But those are the guitars I go. But for some reason, I just really like the Delos. And the Delos, I don't know what it is. I don't know why it, you know, when I made that guitar, had them build the guitar, like, as you guys know, that wasn't a signature guitar. That wasn't anything. That wasn't anything other than I just had them build a guitar that looked like my Fender Copper Strat. And it just slowly, over time, I just kept going to it for some reason. I don't know what it is that it makes me want to play it. I don't know. That's it. And in fact, here's the funny part. They call it a signature because they call it the Phil McKnight PM Delos. But like I said, other than the wiring and the color, like, I didn't specify anything. So it's not like I'm sitting here going, well, it's the neck. Of course, it's the best guitar I have because I spec the neck. I didn't spec anything. I just had, in fact, the wiring and stuff is, I had them copy the wiring that I did in a couple of my guitars. And then the color, I told them what color I liked. And then they found a slightly cooler color than the one I liked. So it's like I said, it's not specifically for me. It just happened to fit with me. It just feels good, and I feel comfortable with it. And that sometimes, as you know, is more than, you know, that's the thing you can say better than anything else. The guitar just, it fits. It's great. Chris Goodwin, what's up, Chris? He says, a little over a week with the Zeus bass, and I'm digging it. Swirl looks great, and the headless multiscale is awesome. Yeah, he sent me a picture of his bass. It's amazing. He did the, it's like the yellow-green color and the black. So it's. I actually kind of wish I did that one a little bit than the multi one I did, but I had to do the Paw Passion Warfare style. Just I had to, but I think his looked better. I think yours looked better. NYC Geology says, Tone X or HX Stomp for an apartment? My AC-15 is too big. So I actually compared these two products because I was doing that, trying to figure it out. Here's the hard part for me. This is the hard part for me. The big issue between those two is how much more money the HX Stomp is. The HX Stomp's like $600, right? And even used, I think they're like $450. Oh, so they're $549. Okay, so $549. I think they used to be more. Let me look at the retails because I want to see if they came down. Yeah, $699. So I think they were six and now they're $549. So let me show you this. So the HX Stomp is $550. The Tone X is $399. So, I mean, it's a much different price category. The Tonex, this is where sometimes the advice I give is just, it's just garbage. Because I can't quantify it, I can't help you. I can only tell you this stupid thing I'm going to say. Tonex to me is cheaper. Tonex sounds better. I like the HX Stomp more. I don't know why. I don't know what it is. I don't know if it's just back to the familiarity of the HX Stomp. I don't know what it is. I can't qualify it any other way. If you asked me in that question, and I'm going to make sure because I'm going back to your question. You said Tonex or HX Stomp for an apartment. Let me answer the question. Which one is cheaper? The Tonex. Which one sounds better? Quality of effects and distortions? I think Tonex. Which one do I like better? HX Stomp. Which one is the best? But I can tell you this, other than some quirkiness that I seem to be like the Tonex or the HX Stomp a little bit more, I will tell you, man, the Tonex for the price, it's a great product. So, and I don't know if you got it, you would be really missing anything, you know, from the HX Stomp. But I don't know what it is. I've been trying to figure it out. If I could have qualified it and quantified it better, I would have made a video talking about it. But the video would be just this, which is stupid. This one's better, but I still like this one. I don't know what that is. Thank you, Sam80PR. GM says, just glad to catch the live salutations. Thank you, man. I appreciate it. I'm glad you caught it live, too. Alex says, intonation fretted at 12 fret or harmonic? It's a great question, and I'm going to tell you a funny answer about that. Fretted is sharp, and harmonic is a bit flat. I'm not sure which one to believe using clip-on strobe tuner. So this is a funny thing. I've messed with the internet a little bit over the years. So I've done it both ways on the internet, and because I wanted to see what happens with the results. Both ways, some people say the harmonic doesn't work, and there's a reasoning for that. I like fretting it. Interesting enough, I was mentioning Scott Grove earlier. I don't know if he's still hanging around. Scott, I learned a really interesting thing one time. Scott was talking once. This is so many years ago. And he was talking about when you're tuning, you should hit the string as hard as you normally hit. And what's funny was up until that time as a professional tech, guitar tech, I was actually doing the opposite of that. I was being very consistent with, you know, when I'm doing it, setting up intonation, setting up tuning, everything's consistent, everything locked down, just doing it perfect and hitting the same amount of force every time with every string. And I started doing that for myself because it's not really something I can do for someone else because I don't know how you hit. Okay. So with customers, I would keep it sterile. But for me, when I tune now or when I intonate or do anything, I play like I play. So I tune like I play. So I hit as hard as I'm normally going to hit. When I intonate the way I play. In other words, I push down like I normally push down and I pluck the string like I normally pluck. And I found that Scott Grove's advice of just, you know, tune it the way you play, intonate it the way you play. I don't know if he talked about intonation specifically in that video, but that's, I carried it forward to that if he didn't say that. So that's what I would do. That's what I would stick with. The one thing I don't agree with is some people say you can't do the harmonic at all. You can. The point is this. The one thing I love about the internet is always going to have a quantifiable answer for you, which is great. What I can tell you is watching all these guitar techs and guitar luthiers around the world and filming them and talking to them and watching them and interacting with them, they all do it 100 different ways. I've always mentioned this many times. There's an amazing luthier in Germany who I respect highly, who's one of the best builders I've seen. And as far as I'm concerned to this day, he's using the fret and dress file completely freaking wrong to the point where I mentioned it. I go, you know, that goes the other way around. And he's like, yeah. And I don't know to this day if he knew. he said, yeah, he knew and he did it that way anyways. I don't know if I believe that, but I will tell you this. His frets were amazing. The guitar was amazing. And that goes back to what I told you, which is it's, the skills will be more important than the tools, right? We all know that. Just like, you know, just like any piece of gear, that's the whole point, right? Their ability to use the tool is sometimes more valuable than the tool itself. So I'm just saying, although I hear it all the time, you can't do the harmonic, and there's reasons why I agree with that in some ways, I've seen people do it all the ways. I've seen every way you can do something and it come out the right way at the end. So, but me personally, I fret the 12th fret and I hit it at the same the same way I would play pluck the string normally. I just, like I said, I think I said explain it. Don't have to hit it again. Let's see. Oh, and I know you mentioned you're using a clip-on strobe tuner, and that's fine too. Like I said, I use sometimes for whatever reason, when I'm doing intonation or when I'm doing setups, I will have a clip-on tuner, and not even a strobe one, just a clip-on tuner. But I have a strobe one too, clip-on tuner like a Snark, and I'll be using the strobe tuner, and I'm just looking at both. You know, it's kind of nice. Like sometimes I like to think of the clip-on tuners, like the tuning keys, like one of the Floyd Rose, right? Like a tuning keys, not when it's, you know, not when it's unlocked. And then the Peterson is like the fine tuners. Like sometimes it's really nice just to get the clip-on tuner and just get right there. Boop, 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 boop. And then I just start paying attention to the strobe tuner after that, you know, just kind of getting it. Cause sometimes the strobe tuner, when you're way off, man, the thing's just spinning and I'm like, who's got time to pay attention to that? So, Fret Level Midnight says, do you think the move Gibson pulled on Zither affects string swing in any way? Well, I think it helps them because as far as I saw, Gibson is using string swing cradles. That's what I thought I saw on the stands. Because it looks to me like Gibson copied the stand pretty much dead on to, not the specifications because they couldn't, they didn't do the shape, okay? The angle of the neck is different. Of course, they changed the bass. But they cloned the essence of the stand, right? In other words, I think I understand, but I don't know for sure. I have not seen the Gibson stand in person, and I'm not going to buy one and check it out. So, because it does one thing that pisses me off more than anything else. Look, I don't like the situation. We talked about it last week in depth. We don't need to go over it again. The one thing that bums me out or bugs me, I would say bugs me, is, you know, they copied the Zither stand and then they kept the price the same. In fact, so you know, one thing I give, again, let's give credit where credit's due. One thing that I thought was a cool idea of Gibson was they changed the bass to look like a Gibson headstock. I think that was cool marketing. That's cool. The other thing that they did is they're using, I don't know if you saw the Zither stands, they're usually one or two pieces of wood and they're really beautiful, right? And Gibson is doing multiple strips because they're using the used pieces of wood. They're reclaiming the wood. In other words, they're using scrap wood to make these stands. But, you know, we call it reclaim now, right? Faux leather is vinyl. right? So they're reclaimed pieces of wood, which I think is a cool idea, right? I mean, I love that idea, right? I just wish they would have found a way to work with the company that they were cloning and keep, you know, and maybe not be total jerks about it. But the one thing that rubs me wrong the one thing that rubs me wrong the most is, you know, Zither is selling that stand for $200. And that is building the stand in Texas, shipping it to the retailer or Gibson, right? In fact, put this so you know in perspective. Gibson was selling that stand through Sweetwater, through Zither. So Zither built it. Gibson bought it, just like me, from Zither. Okay, think about what I'm selling my Zither Know Your Gear stands. I'm buying them from Zither, and I'm selling to you. There's two people that have to get a pinch, right? Me and then Zither. Gibson would be like me, and then I was selling them to Sweetwater. Imagine a Know Your Gear stand at Sweetwater. Okay, so now it's $200 at Sweetwater. So Gibson is, right? So you got three people. You got Sweetwater, Gibson, and Zither have to make money off that $200 stand. Gibson knocks him off and keeps it at $200 and then uses scrap wood. I love the idea of the scrap wood because it's cool. What I don't like is, dude, they're just such piggy, greedy, piggy. It's a Jack Black joke, right? Piggy, fuck piggy is the greediest people. Like, why? You couldn't make it $179. You couldn't cut the consumer a break at all. You're just going to steal somebody's intellectual properties, make it a little cheaper, cut out middleman, and then keep the money. So where's the benefit to the consumer in that? That was my question in my head. So I'm sorry, Fret Level Midnight. So string swing, I don't think is affected because I think they get the, well, they'll be affected, of course, if Gibson can't sell as many stands as they were selling with Zither because they were buying six figures worth of stands with Zither. So if they don't sell that many stands or more, then I'm sure StringSwing will see a decrease in sales. So there you go. But luckily for us, we're a great community of people who love great quality products, and StringSwing has quality products all the way around. So highly recommend them. Rob says, can AI Phil review my guitars? Friday is drinking day. Yes. AI Phil can do that. M. Kara says, Sam Ash Hollywood closing, liquidation sale, disappointed. Yeah, it's a trend with California. Not that we're going to talk about that, but I mean, things are closing. Stores are closing. Obviously, we lost Sammy Ash back in September, I think, when we lost Sammy. And but you got to understand, Ben Ash and Richard Ash, you know, the family is going to carry on. The one thing that I will say, and I want you to kind of hear this, you know, very important for me to say it the most accurate way, because losing Sammy is horrible. As you know, I really loved that man. He was a great person, very nice to me, very nice to my channel. But I've had many conversations with him on the phone and that were very helpful. I talked about that when we lost him. But some of the things I didn't mention, because obviously his recent passing I didn't want to talk about, was some of the conversations from my way back to him were probably not as pleasant. I was very critical of the way Sam Ash works with social media, and I told him over and over again that I thought that there was tons of opportunities for Sam Ash to flourish in the new world of social media, and there's ways to flourish in, you know, the future of things. And so what I'm trying to say is it is possible that what looks like a negative could be a positive. So yeah, a store closing in Hollywood maybe sounds bad, but it also could be because he was very focused and the company was very focused on the stores, and maybe there's a future for them online and the stores. You know, they can have both. That was my whole point with him back in the day. You can be both. You know, you can be all things. You can be online presence and store in store presence. And you know, I don't know how many people are going to Hollywood. You know, I used to go to Hollywood all the time. I mean, every time I took my kids to Disneyland, every time I went to Universal Studios, especially Universal Studios, because you have to pass it to get there. Every time I went anywhere in California, my family knew I was going to Hollywood. Sam Ash, the Carbon store, which is not there anymore, by the way. The Mesa Boogie store, which I don't think is there anymore. Anymore. It might be, but I don't think so. The Guitar Center. A row of other stores. There was a row of stores. This Hollywood to me is no different than New York City, where it had all the row of stores that are pretty much gone now. You know, the Manny's is gone. All this is gone. So I don't think that's a sign of anything other than that was a good strategic move. I don't know particulars of that move or that closure and stuff, but I would say that my guess is, this already sounds like a smart move. Sam Ash needs to improve their website. They need to focus on their website. Ben Ash, who is a very nice person again, has reached out to me and asked me about doing clinics. And I talked to you guys about this. I definitely talked to my patrons in detail about this, about doing clinics in their stores. And I'm highly excited about that. But one of the things I talked about is that my world is the internet and their world is physical stores. And we are not cohabitating correctly. I don't know how to make money with going and giving free clinics at the stores. And I don't know how they're going to get money from my audience who's predominantly buying online in their stores, right? And as I told them, I love the idea of doing it. I love the idea of clinics. As I know, I've done them. I love interacting with you personally. But also, you have to be clear about this. Getting 20 to 50 people to show up to a clinic versus 1,200 of you hanging out live on a show and then 40,000 views afterwards, it's a hard angle to come up with. So I would imagine that they are going to close some stores. I'm hoping they take the energy and I hope they improve their website. I think I would love to see Sam Ash flourish in the future online as well. Like I said, I love to see that. I like Sweetwater Guys. I like Sam Ash. I like to see, you know, American Music Supply. I'd like to see all those stores do better. Look, I don't want any stores closing because I want to go to those stores and buy from them. Because I'm, as we've all talked about earlier, we're all fanatical. So I want to go on. He's got some more. He said that basically all store prices the same as GC. He said, Sweetwater rep said one day they'll give me 5% off. Hope for deals. Guess when they send the event to other stores. I'm not sure the rest. Okay, I don't understand the rest. Second part of this question. All store prices same as GC. That okay, so MKRS, that is not true. Samash, unless things have changed, because again, I don't know what's changed recently, but I've done videos, so let's not talk about that. I've done videos where I've been to Samash and I bought from Samash. And so I've done that. And again, those aren't sponsored content videos. They let me film in their store permission wise, but then there was no other gratis giving. In other words, they didn't give me anything. Okay. What I can tell you is every time I went to Samash, I got a deal. Okay. Samash, barring the recent last couple months, because I have not been to a Samash this year, but I've been into Samash as recent as, you know, the end of last year. And same thing. I was with Ralph, not filming content. If you asked for a deal, they gave it to me. They were like, you know, hey, can I get 10% off? Can I get 20% off? Can you make me a deal? They were making deals. They still were acting like Guitar Center did 20 years ago when you can ask Guitar Center for deals. So I would say, although the prices are posted the same, I have seen deals from Samash. So unless things could change, I will try and research that a little further and see if that's something has changed. Maybe they've locked things down and not doing deals like a Guitar Center, but as far as I know, they're still doing deals. Okay. Miranda wants to know, do I still have the JS1000? That's the Joe Satriani guitar. I do not. Thoughts on the guitar? The guitar was fantastic. It's a fantastic guitar. I just wasn't playing it. And as you guys know, if a guitar comes in, something's got to go. And I forgot what came in for that. But that was the one that went off the chopping block. And the reason I got rid of it, and the only reason I got rid of it, was I had a lot of Ibanezes. I still have quite a few. And I like Ibanezes a lot. It's a thing. Like I said, Ibanezes, out of all my guitars that I own, as silly as this is, you might look at them and go, wow, that one guitar is very expensive. That's got to be his crown jewel. The Ibanezes are the crown jewel for me because they are the guitars that I wanted when I was young that I couldn't afford. I didn't even think, like I told you guys, I didn't think about these Gretsches, Parkers, PRSs. That stuff was never on my radar when I was younger because that stuff was like, that's Ferraris and Lamborghinis, right? To me, for lack of better analogy, this is going to sound stupid, but it's just true. The Ibanezes to me were like Ford Mustangs and Toyota Tacomas. They were the things that like, you know, your richer kids had. But you know, like I couldn't can't afford a Toyota Tacoma, can't afford a Ford Mustang. Those things were just, and so Ibanezes always have that kind of feel to me of like, I finally have one. So, so I got a little carried away collecting them and I had to tone it back a little bit. Seth says, hey Phil, I love the podcast. Thank you, man. I appreciate that. Been bringing old episodes binging all It'd be nice if I could read. Binging old episodes all week. Gassing for an 80 shred guitar. Thoughts? Budget up to $1,500. Already own an RG550. Cool. You know, it's tough, man. We've talked about this. It's a tough market for that price point for legitimate 80 shred guitars. Because it's too shallow and too high. You know, it's 80s guitars, for some reason, sit absolutely where you don't have a budget. They are either $500 and they're fantastic, $900 and they're fantastic, or they're $3,000. It's like, it literally doesn't want to sit anywhere in between else. So you can get great Jacksons, Ibanezes, Kramers, ESPs or LTDs for sub $1,000 that are fantastic, $1,000 and below. And then once you go like Jackson USA, even the production guitars, which you can get now for $2,000, which are fantastic. I mean, I don't know how you're going to beat those. Some of those Jacksons are giving them away now for just sub of $2,000 for a USA-made Jackson guitar. E2s by ESP, same thing. They're $2,000, $2,500. So my answer to you is $1,500. You're either going to have to pony up a lot more cash, not quite double, but close, or go the other way down, and I would say sub 1,000. At $1,000 and down, I highly recommend. I like the Made Mexico Jacksons. I like the Made Mexico Fenders a lot. I'm probably, those are some of my favorite 80s guitars for the price point. Of course, EVH is the same thing. It's the same kind of branding and Made in US or Made Mexico. So, and then of course you have Made Japan guitars for those 80s vibes. You can get those. So There you go. And then somebody might have some more suggestions in the comments too, but those are the ones I think of. Music K says, Music J, Music with a K, J says, what up, Philly Mac? What are your thoughts on the Boss Nextone amps? I don't think I've heard you mention them before. I played a Boss Nextone years and years ago. I really liked them. My only negative was that I thought they were great, but we did a shootout, not a video, but we did a shootout with a bunch of friends and we were checking them out. And I, at the time, I had some Roland Cubes. I had the Roland Cube 80 and the Roland Cube 60 that I loved. And I thought, oh, I'll go Nextone, like higher up. And to me, they were the same. Like, I thought, you know, the Cube stuff was good enough for me. So I like Nextone, but I thought the Cubes were close enough for me to, you know, how good they all sounded. Mr. S says, hey, the best necks for jacked up fingers and hands, fat fingers that get overused tendonitis. I've been stretching, but I would appreciate input from the listeners. Eastman, Romero's neck, most comfy so far. Thanks. What I would suggest is sometimes, even if you have tendonitis or arthritis or, you know, all the other things that can go wrong with your hands, one thing that I will tell you that will help you is you're just looking for a comfortable position to be in that you can play for as long as possible. And so a lot of players like to throw generic advice at you, like get a thin neck. Oh, get a asymmetrical neck. Oh, make sure your fretboard's flat. You know, they're going to do that. But the truth is like you saw with Eastman, it's already difficult to find a great neck when your hands are fine. Okay. It's already a difficult thing to find comfort in that. I've played guitars where the necks are not even an eighth of an inch thicker. And I've had cramping so bad in my forearm and my wrist from that neck for playing for an hour, 2 hours. Just that little bit of this, moving my thumb like this. And it just hurts. And I don't mean like now that I'm old. I mean, when I was young, it was just weird, you know? So it's about comfortable positions and how long you can play. Matt's saying the Endura neck, same thing. What I would suggest is that you have to try necks. There's great suggestions. Like I said, Matt just gave you a great one with the Endura neck where we're going to suggest things you try. And I know it's tough because like we said, a lot of times you have to buy before you try. But really, it's just about you just got to play a neck and find it and find one that's comfortable. But don't worry about what I'm basically trying to get at is sometimes I've heard this with players go, oh, I have tinnitus or tendonitis, or they go, or I have, you know, arthritis. And they'll say, and I have this neck and it's comfortable, but it's chunky. And I go, oh, so you don't like it? And they go, well, it's comfortable, but you know, you're not supposed to use a chunky neck. And I'm like, no. Use whatever neck's comfortable. So you don't worry about, because you're like, oh, my hand's small, my hand's smaller, my hand hurts, so I need the style neck. You're never going to figure it out why one neck works over another. Everybody wants to try to kind of, you know, calculate it. It's not that easy. It's just, you know, just the position you put your hand in, you just know. You just happen to know what necks fit feel really good. So, Brad Guitar Miller, what's up, Brad? I hope you're feeling better. He says, I put the Jackson Habanero P90s in my TTG Challenger 3. It didn't have the Dylan. Oh, they didn't have the Dylan. They sound great, just not sure how to set the height adjustments up on it. Okay, I hear a lot of change in their correct setting. Okay, that part I don't understand, but let's get back to this. So setting the height on the pickup. So he's talking about, he's got the Grover Jackson's Habanero P90s and he put them in his TTG Challenger 3. So I always say you set the height like moving a microphone on a speaker. You just use your ear. A lot of people will do it and I go, it sounds great here. And they go, can you see me the measurement? And I'm like, look, I am telling you that there are so many things factored into this. And although there's generically, I could say like maybe give you a measurement. I haven't really measured them, so I'd have to measure a guitar to tell you. But here's what I can tell you. It's not just string height, okay? It's not just the distance from the pickup to the string. That is not the case. It is sometimes the type of string, Okay. So if you're using NYXLs or if you're using DR Blues Pure Nickels, that distance to get the same or to get to what you want, you're going to have to adjust the height of the pickup. It's that simple, right? So you set up your guitar the way you like, and then you adjust the height of the pickup, and you don't follow any rules. So for instance, if you adjust the height and you go, it sounds good, and then you go, you tilt the high end part of the pickup, the treble side of the pickup, a little higher than the bass side, that's great. If you tilt the bass side a little higher than the treble side, and you're like, yeah, but it's not perfectly flat, that's great. If you adjust the individual pole pieces until they're, you know, you find some spot, you just do that. I've heard a ton of people explain, like, I even saw a thing the other day, somebody posted on Instagram, like, this is exactly where you set all your pole pieces, you know, your adjustment pieces on a pickup to get perfect sound. And I'm like, look, that's a great guideline, and that's great, and their suggestion is probably well warranted. And then finite adjust them after that. So you just adjust it. It's one of those things. The reason I say this, the reason I'm so hardcore about this, is I believe because people don't do that, because players don't adjust those pickups and spend the time finding those spots, their rationale is always, it's always going somewhere else. It's always like, I get a new pickup, I need a new this, I need a new that, I need to change this, I got to get a new amp. And I'm like, you know, if you just spend some time finding the sweet spot in the pickup, and not only the sweet spot in the pickup where it sounds good, but also where the guitar plays great. Because again, sometimes, especially P90s, they can really affect those strings. A lot of people talk about your pickups being high and, you know, pulling your strings down and buzzing. It's not actually true 90% of the time, okay? That doesn't really happen that often. But it is more true with P90s than any other pickup, and then probably single coils after that. So it's very accurate. So there you go. Okay. All right. How are we doing? We got Seth. He said, let's get some likes. Only got 421 likes at the moment, 1,250 viewers. That would be very gracious of you guys. I know somebody said, some people say they don't want to do the likes because it, like, you know, holds it in your history and stuff and all that stuff. I get it, man. I get it. But if it doesn't bug you and you can put a like out there, throw the like out. Why not? What's it going to do? Thank you, Grumpy, for the super sticker. It says new. It's awesome. I think that means you're new to this thing. Grumpy, you were here last week because I remember it was Grumpy and there's Grumpy, my guitar. Tom says, hey, Phil, not beer money. Thanks for the show. So, Tom, I'm going to be drinking wine tonight. I'm going to take my wife to a fine restaurant. I'm just kidding. I told you guys I've lost some weight. And one of the things we do to lose weight besides walking and hiking a lot is we walk for alcohol now. It's a thing. I know it's a silly thing to say, but it's true. It means if you want to drink alcohol, which is usually for us, it's for me, it's like either a beer, or for her, it's wine, and or for me, wine. We have to walk for it. So that means if I want a beer tonight and she wants a glass of wine, we have to walk to the grocery store. The grocery store is about 2.5 miles round trip, so not super far. So that's about 35, 40 minute walk. And we walk and we go get the liquor and we can have it. So tonight we're going to walk to a restaurant that is about a mile and a half each direction. And we're going to share we're going to have some wine and some food and enjoy ourselves. And thank you, Tom. I'll think of you when I pay the bill. Because one of the things that sucks about wine when you go to a restaurant is all of a sudden you're like, what's the price on this? You're like, at the store, it's like a fraction of that. I don't know why wine seems expensive, but beer is probably marked up the same, and it just seems like it's not as bad as wine. So that's our plans. We got plans. Okay, let me grab a quick question or two from. Okay, Rick wants to know, hey Phil, are the pickups in the Paul Reed Smith hollow body SE splittable? What he means is the piezo pickup. I know you guys think I'm doing this on serious. What happens is you learn the right way to say it, and then everybody tells you that's wrong, and then you say it 10 other ways. It's like you just can't even win. Anyways, the transducer pickup for the acoustic sound in the guitar. He goes, is it splittable? I don't remember. If I didn't mention in the video, I don't remember. It is splittable in the USA ones, but I'm pretty sure it is splittable. You can send it through a stereo wire stereo cable out. I don't think it, well, it doesn't include the stereo cable. I think it is splittable. I just don't know the answer. That's horrible. That I don't know the answer. But I'll find out. Mike says, hey, Phil, in your opinion, what guitar manufacturer has the best customer service and tries the hardest to get problems solved? Ooh, that's a great question. And I would say Fender. I really believe that. You know, the reason I'm going to tell you that is, look, customer service is an employee thing. So the right employee at the right time, you're going to have great customer service. The wrong employee at the wrong time, bad customer service. And that really comes down to the training and the facilitation of that. However, it's also about resource. And one thing this industry is guilty of, like every other damn industry that's out there, is they put resources in selling you crap and not in supporting you, right? The guitar industry is actually worse. I'm sure a lot of you guys in the other industries, like tech industry and stuff, are going to tell me how their industry is much worse. There has been I've been in a lot of industries over the years, and I get very, very few industries are as cheap as the guitar industry when it comes to that stuff. And, but Fender, what they do right is they are, not only their size, that helps, I'm sure, but they do have good training. They have training for their employees, and they have resources, which means bodies, okay? So, like, let's talk about Kiesel for a second. Jeff Kiesel and I had this talk, obviously, when you think bad customer service, a lot of you are going to think Kiesel because he, you know, obviously he's had a lot of public problems with him personally with customers. You know, he's a little intense, right? One thing I like about Jeff, and I'll tell you this just so you guys know, you don't have to guess Jeff. You know, that doesn't mean he's huggable. It just means you don't have to guess, you know? And I personally like that. I'd rather somebody just, you know, be a little brash, but be honest. But he's even talked about the fact that he's had to hire new customer service people and he's working on it and he likes the new customer service and he's failed at customer service for many years. And the fact that he said it, I don't know if that was, that those statements were made because of conversations me and him had at a dinner once, where that's what we talked about that, honestly. Like I said, I tell you guys, you know, some of the best companies, when they get a hold of me and we're in behind the scenes, the best companies, in my opinion, want to know what they think I think you think. Because what I think is irrelevant. I'm nobody. But what you guys think collectively, the data on that is hard to get. So, and they know, look, I'm talking to you guys every Friday. We're talking. I'm answering your questions. You know, we're discussing things. And they go, hey, what do people think? What do the guitar players think? What is going on out there? What's going, you know, what do they think of us? What do they like about us? What do they hate about us? And he was one of the first ones, not first ones. He was one of the foremost ones that was like, I want to know what people are thinking right now. And I told him it's not all great. And he took it well. And I think he's done that, but he still has a resource issue, which is, you know, 60 employees in, and he's making high-end guitars and he just doesn't have 10 customer service reps. Fender has a beautiful call center in Arizona with a ton of customer service reps with a great system in place. You know, they use an Oracle database, which is great. If you guys know what that is, it's awesome because it's, again, they can train their employees on that and give them access to information. So that's one company I think of. When I think of most companies and their bad customer service, let's take for the sake of argument, because we'll end on this, let's take out a bad employee or a bad person. That just happens, okay? You can't control that. Everybody hires somebody with the best intentions. No one's hiring bad people on purpose. Like, that's the best way to think about that, right? Okay? There is failures to train them. There are failures to identify the problems, but they didn't intend to hire a bad person or, a person who's either has a bad personality or someone who's just not very good at their job. That's not the intention. But one thing that companies are plagued with is the low amount of customer service ability they have. And that's where you start seeing the trend when you try to get a hold with your questions. They're overwhelmed and you can feel it. You can feel that they just want you to hurry and they don't really want to save, you know, or they don't want to solve your problems. They want to get you, they're going to get rid of you. And to me, I've actually worked, I'm not on customer service, but I told you guys, I used to run an Oracle database and I used to run a large, you know, Fortune 500. I used to run, you know, that stuff, customer service, you know, right, in the area. And one thing I can tell you is that, You don't want your customer service people to feel like their goal is to get rid of you. And it's very hard to be effective with taking care of people, effective meaning cost effective, and also, you know, not spending so much time that you're not cost effective. So again, churning people. And so I think when I think of people who are good at customer service in the guitar industry, I would say Fender's up there. I'm trying to think of a runner up. I think PRS for the most part, again, understaffed. I've said this before. I think you can get a hold, most time you'll get a hold of Sean when you call him, and he's a great guy and he's really nice at handling things. But again, you're asking for me to lend my opinion to a company and then not be totally wrong when next week when you go, I called that company, it was horrible. I would say after that, then I would say after the big company Fender, it really goes down to small companies where you can actually get the owners on the phone. And then it's who actually answers their phones and who actually talks to you. And then there's some few smaller owners that I think are pretty cool that actually will, you know, you can get them on the phone. It's pretty cool. Mark says PRS is good. Yeah, like I said, I've had good experiences with PRS. And I think we'll end on that. I wanted to give you a second one. I just don't feel like I honestly can say another company besides Fender wholeheartedly without, you know, wavering in my voice of, I don't know, as long as the situation's right and the day's right. But I think that's probably the good one. That's probably the customer service to strive for. So there you go. Which is interesting because, like I said, I critique them pretty hard. But when they do something right, you should also give them the accolade. And then a lot of you guys are saying, Dave Freeman answers these emails. I agree. One thing, sir, somebody says, sir, has been good. One thing I kind of detract from a little bit, although, like I said, some of the smaller companies, you get to talk to the owners, which is great. I really highly recommend that. I think it's really good. One thing about that is when you're talking about $5,000 guitars and $3,000 and $4,000 amps, kind of like, you know, I think the customer service thing is a given. It's the reason why I say this, not because you spend a lot of money. That's a factor. But the volume is so low. You know, the amount of you right now watching this, either live or replay, that have spent $5,000 on a guitar or $3,000 on an amp, it's not that number. It's not that big. I mean, a lot of you are going to go, me, because it's going to go in the comments. But I'm like, yeah, trust me. Out of 1,100 people right now, the marketing, the analytics show that the majority of you guys are buying very, very more priced friendly product. You guys are not buying the extremes on the high end. It's not as likely. So what I'm saying is a lot of you are not going to have those experiences. A lot of you are not calling John Sir to find out or Sir to find out about your $6,000 custom guitar. It's not as common. So that's why I was trying to stick with brands that were more, you know, more driven for customer service or more, you know, more volume of customer numbers. See, I can tell the show's getting long when I start getting too tired to finish a thought. On that note, I'm going to call it. One thing I did want to say before we go is don't forget if you want to enter to win the Steve Brown Super Strat right there. You can watch the video of that guitar. It comes with a tweed case, and we'll throw some goodies in there for you to say thank you. We'll announce the winner next Friday, so you have some more time to enter to win that. If you haven't checked out the video, I'd appreciate it if you check out some of the videos this week. I told you guys, we worked hard to increase the volume of videos, which means the videos get lower views because we're putting out more. But that's okay. That's okay. But I don't want any of you to miss them if that's something you're interested in. And on that note, I want to thank the moderators. If you guys know, they have blue names and blue wrenches. They were kicking butt all day show. I took notice of that. As always, guys, you guys are killing it. Thank you so much for the patrons and the members for sponsoring the show, which makes it easier to turn off the commercials for the live part, which is cool because I don't have to worry about losing, you know, like, oh no, the bulk of the money's probably made live. It's nice to know that I'm supported on the back end so we can make decisions like this and give it a try. And I'm hoping it works out for the best. And on that note, I'm going to go have a bottle of wine with my wife. All right, guys. As always, thank you guys so much for your time and know your gear.